more comfortable, more direct, more aware. But we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. This is the second week where we are beginning this study in the book of Ecclesiastes. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1, we're going to be looking at the second half of the book, verses 12 to 18. So feel free and go ahead to turn there, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. If you didn't grab a Bible and you need a Bible, there are some Bibles back there by the curtain. If anybody needed one, and you can grab one of those. And for those of you that were here last week and are here again this week, I'm glad to see you've come back. Last week was a little depressing, a little bit discouraging, and you might have looked at that and been like, so I come to church to be like encouraged and given like, you know, happy things, and you just were a real killjoy last week. And it seems like the whole book's going to be this way, so good on you for coming back, because the book of Ecclesiastes can leave you with this distinct pessimistic or discouraging tone, right? And that's how it started last week. Because last week he said everything is utterly meaningless under the sun, right? It'll get better. It'll be more encouraging as we go, but not yet. We're still going to be in a little bit of the discouraging mode, but hopefully we can come to a place where we're going to leave through those doors different than when we came in. That's the goal. That's the hope. And honestly, my prayer is what you just did together, the praying and the encouraging, that's what changes you too. That you leave changed because of that. And God's word is part of it, but it's not all of it. If you've ever spent any time, like I said, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 12 is where we're going to start. But if you've ever spent any time with kids, like 2 or 3 years old, they have a hunger to know why. Right? Why? They want to know why. Why do we have fingers? Grabbing things, that's the thing, right? Why are there stairs? Like, they want to just know why, and they want to know the why of everything. Why do people honk their horns? That's a long answer, right? Because sometimes people are mad, sometimes they're saying hi. How do you know which one's which? You just kind of know. You know if it's a, hey, how you doing? Or a, get out of my way? Or we're going to talk afterwards. Like, you know which one it is, but why do people honk their horns? Why don't we only eat candy? Why can't we all ride dinosaurs everywhere? Those are real questions, deep questions. And this hunger to have answers to these questions never goes away, right? You think it did, but it doesn't. The deep questions just keep getting deeper, right? You're not wondering anymore why we don't ride dinosaurs. You've got deeper questions, and I'm sure you've had times where you've wrestled with some why questions, right? Because having those answers, if you just know why, it kind of helps you with life processes, right? And understanding what's going on better. And so maybe you've asked these questions: why do bad things happen to good people? If I just knew why, maybe I could help my friend move on from this. Right? Or why does there have to be pain and suffering at all? Why does it have to be there at all? If I knew, maybe I could get over this hurt a little bit faster and deal with it a little bit better. Or why am I even here? If I knew, I might feel more motivation and more purpose each day. If I just knew, why are we here? Why is life a thing? Or on the opposite end, why is there death? Like, why is that? Why does that have to happen? Or why is there conflict in the world? Because if I had an answer, I could better understand what to think and what to do about Russia and Ukraine. If I just understood, why is there even allowed to be conflict in the world? You know, we've got those questions that just plague us. Why poverty? Why starvation? Why oppression? You know, knowing this answer could help me know how much to help others, or if I should help others. Like, is poverty their fault, or is it something that is unavoidable? Like how knowing this might help, or why isn't God more obvious with his existence? Why isn't it so much more clear to people? If I just knew, then it might change how I live. And that's just the why questions, right? And those are just some, right? There's plenty of what and how questions that we get caught up with as we go through life that, man, if we just had answers, it would make navigating life so much easier. And the lack of answers or the constant feeling like there's things you just don't know can get wearisome. It can cause you to have some really deep moments in life. And the teacher in Ecclesiastes, he's got questions too. So if you look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, I'm going to read verses 12 and 13. Eventually we'll get through the end through verse 18. But in verse 12 he says this, I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Verse 13, I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. So first, a couple of reminders as we get into this and we work through this. So this is from the perspective of Solomon. You see that there in verse 12. It's from the perspective of Solomon. He was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And so this could actually, that sentence means this could only be from his perspective. This could only be from Solomon's perspective because Jerusalem wasn't the capital of Israel when the kingdom was divided by Solomon's ancestors, and it wasn't the capital of Jerusalem when David was king. So there's only one king that was king in Jerusalem over Israel, and that was Solomon. So this is from his perspective. Also, some of you are like, you told me you don't think Solomon wrote this, and I'm adding to like the opposite argument, right? I get it. I know. I'm still on that ship. I'm on that boat, okay? So this is from his perspective, verse 12. And he has the resources to study and to explore, to investigate this topic of that he's looking at. And notice he says here, he says it's under the heavens in verse 13. I applied my mind to study and explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. So if anybody, he's got the resources to try to figure this out, figure out the answer to the question that he's asking. And this phrase, under the heavens, this is the same reminder of the perspective that he's taking that we talked about last week, under the sun. Same phrase, same expression, just a slightly different way of saying it. And so this is from a human standpoint. He wants to have answers, and he wants to look for answers anywhere he can find it under the sun, under heaven. Is there anyone on earth, any way to figure out the answer to these questions? He's not doing it from God's view. He's doing it with a view of life without God, as though there is no God. Is there anyone out there? Is there any way to find answers to these questions? And so he says he applies his mind to study and explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens, verse 13. So he set his heart, that's what applied the mind, right? He set his heart on, meaning he had the most sincere and earnest pursuit. He genuinely is seeking out the answer to these questions, deep and wide searching, to use his wisdom exhaustively to figure out why do we do what we do. You see it there in verse 13. He set his heart on studying and exploring deep and wide search through wisdom, all that is done. Why do we do what we do? I need to know. I want to know why. Why do we do what we do? And when he says he's exploring by wisdom, that means he's using all the skill, all the know-how that men could have, all the street smarts, all the correct discernment and discretion, correctly figuring out all the puzzle pieces. That's what wisdom is in the ancient world. It's more than just knowledge. It's assessment. It's discretion. It's the ability to dissect information correctly, to put everything up there and see all the pieces of the puzzle the way they should be, and then put them together the right way, and then act accordingly. It's the ability to deal and navigate life with all of its nuances well, practically, successfully. That's wisdom. And he's saying, look, I took every skill out of my toolbox that I could possibly do. I talked to every single person that had the skill of wisdom, everyone I could possibly find. He wrote a book with everything that he gathered, right? And he's saying, like, I did the deepest and the widest search to figure out this question from human wisdom's perspective. And remember, this is just wisdom under the sun, so this is wisdom without God. And if you know about Solomon, you'll know that God gave him the gift of being the wisest person in the world. But just because he received that gift, doesn't mean that he always used that gift in conjunction with what God wanted, in conjunction with God's purposes and the worship of God. He had the gift, but that doesn't mean he always used it correctly. And so from this perspective, from his perspective, this is a human wisdom trying to figure this out on his own without reference, without knowledge of God. Why do people do what they do? Why do we do what we do? His ability to dissect everything in life. Why do we do what we do? He wanted to know the deepest questions of life, the deepest whys. Like, what is the meaning of life? Why is this a thing? And so this quest in verse 13, he says, his search for answers, he calls a heavy burden. Right? I set out to explore why we do what we do. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. He points the finger at God. He breaks character here for a moment. You notice that? He breaks character for a moment because if you read the end, I told you you could cheat and read the end. This guy does believe in God. He does believe that life should be taken with a perspective of God. And so he breaks character there for a moment and admits something about God. And he points the finger and says, God has placed this enormous weight on humanity. And this is the weight: to toil, to labor, and live without meaning. He says God has put this huge weight on people to live, to work through life without answers, to do this without meaning, without significance. Another way to say this phrase, what a heavy burden he's laid on them, is it is an unhappy business God has given to the children of man to be busy with. It's an unhappy business to labor and toil through life without meaning or answers. Discouraging. There's a lot of weight to it. It really, really gets you down after a while. It's an unhappy business. And what he's referring to when he says God put this burden on man to labor without purpose, to labor without meaning and significance, he's pointing back to Genesis 3 and the curse that God gave men. God cursed men to toil, to work all their days without much progress, without much success, without much change, like the rivers go into the oceans, but they're never actually full. You just do it again and again and again. And the teacher says, for what? You labor and you toil day after day, and God gave us this burden for what? It's a meaningless existence, and that is a heavy burden to be given by God to do day after day after day without answers, without significance, without meaning. And the teacher says, God put that burden on humanity. We're going to come back to that statement because it's significant, and we'll see something interesting in it here in a few moments. But he says, God put this burden on humanity to work through life without answers, just to do it again. It's meaningless. And so his point is, from that moment on, Genesis 3, Adam got the curse to work the ground. The questions of life plagued and burdened men, making living without answers a burden. And it does. You've confronted questions like that. You haven't found answers for those questions, those whys, those whats, those hows, and it can weigh on you. It can really start to depress you and take away your confidence. And the teacher points that out. He's like, this is a heavy burden to live life without answers. And so the teacher decided, I'm going to shoulder this heavy burden. I'm going to take this heavy burden on, and I'm going to discover. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to have the answers to whys. With all of his resources, with all of his natural ability to solve problems and dissect answers and successfully deal with life, why do we do what we do? And all those other questions. And here's what he found in verse 14. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun, meaning experienced. He's gone out, he's dissected all of them. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Verse 15, what is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I have seen, I've considered everything. I have inspected personally all these questions, everything that happens. I've experienced it all that life has. I've considered all the questions that come out of those life experiences. You see loss. Why is there loss? You see pain. Why is there pain? I've experienced all of it, and I've dissected all the questions that come from life. And my conclusion is this: my wisdom didn't help at all. I got no answers. It didn't solve the why do we do what we do. It didn't relieve me of the burden of doing life without answers. I was chasing after the wind. And you're going to see that expression quite a bit after this in this book. It was chasing after the wind. I had ambition. I had genuine ambition for the unattainable. I was trying to get something you just can't grab. And imagine this word picture, right? Imagine chasing after the wind. Like, imagine doing it, you doing it. It's even funnier if you imagine you being the one to chase the wind. It doesn't work, right? It doesn't work. It's impossible, right? This is what he says, trying to figure out, trying to use your wisdom to gather answers and understand all the questions of life, why we do what we do, is like me trying to catch the wind. You can't. It's impossible. And then he explains why in verse 15. He says, what is crooked, here's why, it's chasing after the wind. What's crooked can't be straightened. What's lacking can't be counted. So he says, what I discovered in trying to do this, dedicating all my resources to figure out the answers to the tough questions, is that there is always a twist. You see the word there, crooked? Sometimes some versions will say twisted. What is twisted? There's always twists in the questions or in the answers. There's always gaps when you try to figure these things out. Life's anomalies, the deepest questions, like why does there have to be bad things that happen to good people, those types of questions, the ones that will help us understand or give us purpose or focus or clarity for the burden of life itself, they can't be straightened out by wisdom. They're too twisted. There's too many gaps in those. He said, look, I tried. I am the wisest man on earth, gifted by God, and I can't figure it out. I can't answer them. I can't untwist it. The gaps that make finding the sum, right, the gaps that make getting the correct count and the total, it's they can't be filled in by human wisdom. You're going to look at this question, there's gaps there, and you can't figure out how to get the total because there's something lacking in the equation. It's just there, and no man can fill it in. No matter how hard you try, you're chasing after the wind, looking for those answers. Pretty discouraging, isn't it? He's saying there's no way men can figure out the answer to these questions. There's no way that you're going to know and be able to answer why bad things happen to good people and why something like Russia and Ukraine happens. There's no way you're going to be able to untwist that. There's too many gaps for you to get the right total, the right sum. You're trying to finish a 1,000-piece puzzle with all white pieces and 3 of them are missing. You can't do it. You're going to try, but you can't do it. In fact, the author reveals this very truth that I said we're going to go back to this. He reveals himself that there are some gaps that just can't be filled by the way you think. Earlier when he said that God burdened man with this frustration, it's not true. Not completely true. The teacher counted with his under-the-sun wisdom, and he got the wrong total. That's why I said we're going to go back to that this is a heavy burden God laid on mankind. It's only partly true. Yes, God did burden us with the labor and the toil, but not because God wanted to burden us and to make life meaningless. Like, it is the burden God placed on us, but it's not because he wanted life to be meaningless. It's because sin forced the issue. Because men sinned, God burdened. Because men sinned, life became meaningless, and God burdened them with toiling. It's men's sin that makes it meaningless, not God, but God did burden. And so even there, it reveals the wisest man in the world still had gaps. He still came to the wrong sum in figuring out this. Yes, it's true, but it's not the full truth. Because men sinned, God gave men the unhappy business of laboring without meaning in sin. So the point is, human wisdom can't untwist certain things. It can't fill enough gaps to get the right totals, to get all the answers. The wisest man couldn't do it, and so the disheartening thing is, you think you can? You think you're going to get answers to those deep, tough questions that plague you? Verse 16. So I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. So then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is chasing after the wind. So when he realized this, that he mastered human reasoning and understanding, and still it left things unanswered, it left things twisted, it left gaps, the teacher says, okay, I decided to understand the alternative approaches to the burden of life, right? Without meaning or answers, that burden, what so if seeking the answer isn't good enough, then what do we do? Madness and folly. He's like, I tried to go the other direction. Maybe that provided solutions. In other words, you know, other words could be inserted here for madness and folly, abandonment, disdain, disregard, indulgence, embraced ignorance could be put in there. So this tends to be the way that we go, because if we're all honest, we recognize right away, I'm not smart enough to figure this out. I'm not smart enough to figure out the answer to these questions that bother me. And so what we tend to do is this. We go this direction because we're not smart enough to do the first part that the teacher tried. When we can't find the answers, or the questions bother us too much, when we see pain or suffering, or we experience deep hurt, or we question why, when there aren't answers to our troubles and our hurts, we stop caring. Well, if I can't figure out the answer, then I'll just not care anymore. I just try to ignore it. We decide, okay, if ignorance is bliss, then I'll be blissful, because then I just don't have to deal with those deep questions. It doesn't mean the deep questions aren't there. It just means I'm not going to think about them because I can't figure it out. Why even try to figure it out? I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. We live like we don't need the answers. You know, who cares what happens after death? I don't have an answer for it, so who cares what happens after death then? Or who cares if this is meaningless? I've got my friends and my family. That's all I need, right? And so we go that route. Like, I don't need the answers. I've just got my friends and my family. We live in the moment, maybe, where we drown the pain, you know, that we can't answer. I don't have an answer for the pain, so I'm just going to drown the pain. You know, I'm going to do whatever I can to kind of to self-medicate. You know, the problems we can't solve, they nag us, and so we drown them in pleasure, in stuff, in obsession, in ignorance. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to deal with it. And the teacher says, yes. So when my deep and wide search for answers through all the wisdom that I could gain didn't work, I thought, all right, I'll just try the other way, and I'll live for the moment. I'll gain successful living and freedom from the burden that is placed on us. I'll gain it that way. But that's not the answer either, he says. It didn't give him the solution that he was looking for. It also didn't give any answers. It didn't unburden him from the questions. He says, I was still chasing after the wind. So I went the other direction. I thought, I'm just going to handle this the way most people handle it. I'm just going to ignore all of it. I'm going to get lost in pleasure. I'm going to get lost in stuff, in obsessions, in ignorance. And I still didn't have any solution for it. I was still burdened with the questions and the lack of answers. It was still chasing after the wind. So the answer wasn't abandon. It wasn't bliss. It wasn't ignorance. It wasn't folly or pleasure. The answer wasn't human wisdom. It wasn't anything like that. And so in the end, the teacher explored all of life. He tried everything you can imagine in his search to find answers for why do we do what we do, for all of these questions. And what he discovered is that they're too twisted and there are too many gaps. There is no solution under the sun. No one can straighten them out and no one can get the right sum. And so he says this in verse 18. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow, and the more knowledge, the more grief. The more he lived, the more he experienced, and the more human wisdom he gained from it, the more he learned, and the more questions there were that were unanswered. He's like, I just got to the next level and realized there's even more questions I don't have answers to. The more wisdom I gained, just the worse it got, because there was just more lack of answers, and it grieved him. The more sorrow there was at the new gaps he found that he couldn't fill. And his search only enlarged the problem, and there were just more twists. There were more gaps, more things to be filled, more questions. And so what's the problem? What's the problem here? Is he right? Is he right that there are no answers, that the gaps can't be filled, and no matter what you do, there's just more sorrow, more grief without any resolution? Yes, he is right under the sun. Without God, there is just more sorrow, more lack of answers, more burden, and more toil. He's absolutely right. Men cannot use their wisdom. You cannot use your wisdom to solve life's questions and problems. You'll just find more. You'll create more. He found this out firsthand. Smartest man couldn't figure it out. We cannot avoid life's questions and problems with pleasure or abandonment or disregard. It is still our burden to bear. In fact, later in the book, the teacher actually says, and this will plague some of you for a moment, the teacher will actually say that he's discovered that God intentionally makes certain things twisted. Not only can you not figure out the answers, God actually twists them so you can't figure them out on your own. Because from the very beginning, when sin corrupted men and removed the meaning and purpose in life, God burdened men with labor, and then we were left with a trail of breadcrumbs. Sin took meaning and significance out of life, and men, we were burdened with labor, and then there's this trail of breadcrumbs meant to lead us to the solution. Questions that can't be answered is a breadcrumb. Right? Equations and problems that can't be solved by men in their wisdom isn't meant to push us to say, why can't I figure it out? I want the answer. It's meant to push us to the one who has the answers. And the teacher arrived at the right conclusion. These breadcrumbs lead somewhere. These questions lead somewhere. These unanswerable dilemmas, they lead somewhere. But I can't straighten these out. Right? I can't get answers. I can't fill these gaps and find the solutions. I can't avoid and ignore the questions. I can't drown them out in pleasure and stuff. They're still there unanswered. On our own, the burden is still there. And this is because the questions and dilemmas of life aren't meant to be solved by men. We might have the capacity to find an answer or something that seems like an answer here or there, but we just get more questions. We don't, and we won't ever find solutions because we're only human. They can only be resolved. The burden can only be dealt with by the one who placed the burden there in the first place, God. God is the only one that will solve it, will provide solutions for these burdens that we have, these questions. The solution and resolution is found by a faith in God and a trust in Him. That's what's missing. That's why he couldn't find the answers. It's why he couldn't deal with the burden. It's why nothing worked, because he was doing it on his own. He lacked a faith in God. He lacked the perspective that God is the one who put the burden there. This is where he missed the gap. God's the one that can provide the solution for the burden as well. You can see the problem, you can think your way through the problem, you can feel your way through the problem, but faith in God is what takes you beyond the sun, beyond human wisdom, and gives you the ability to see beyond what the teacher saw and untwist and fill in gaps that men without God never can. He's got the untwistable character and knowledge. He's got the answers to fill in those gaps that we will never be able to fill in. And the teacher says we need to have faith in God so we can look above and find the solution. In fact, Solomon, the one from whom we get this harsh perspective, leaves us to conclude that the thing that was missing from his wisdom was the fear of God, because he says this. So this is the same guy, same perspective, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? That's another way you see it, that you're not going to be able to figure this out. Your wisdom isn't going to be able to deal with any of those perplexing situations and dilemmas unless you fear God. And then it's the beginning, the solution. And fear here doesn't really mean being afraid, even though maybe a little bit it does. It means revering, respecting, believing in God. This is his, that he is self-existent, that he's the eternal God over all, the one and only. He's significantly more than us in every way. His words deserve our devotion. His character and presence deserve our respect. The fear of God is faith. It's trust in God as he is presented in the Bible. Do you fear God? Do you believe in God? Do you trust God? Do you understand that God exists? And are you convicted about that? Because if that is true, that's where you start to find the solution to all these dilemmas. If we want to navigate well life's nuances and dilemmas and questions and bear the burden that is placed on us because of sin, we have to start with believing and fearing God. And the problem with the teacher's process of trying to understand the whys of life here in Ecclesiastes is that he was doing it on his own, with his own human wisdom, his own ability, without a fear of God, without a faith and a trust in God. And that will never ever give a solution to your problems, ever. You will find more grief, more sorrow, more problems, more things unanswered, more burden. We can only resolve those deepest questions after we cultivate a deep fear, respect, reverence, faith, and trust in God. Then through that faith, God will help us come to terms with the whys of life. And like Job, we might not always get the answer, but we will find the solution. We might not always get the answer as to why this happened, but we will find the solution because God. And we can trust him because he's the one that can fill in all the gaps. He's the one that can untwist every single twisted question and situation. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 6, same guy writing this. The Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. You won't answer those questions. You won't find those solutions unless you turn to God. It won't happen. You'll just find more pain, more frustration, more hurt, more sorrow, more grief, more questions, more unanswered, because God is the one who gives answers and solutions. Only God can untwist and fill the gaps that men can't. So the truth is, I don't really know why this is happening in Ukraine and Russia. I can't know why, but I trust God, and I fear God, and I know that he is sovereign, and he has solutions, and he has answers. And just like he knows and has answers and solutions, and he is good over what's happening there, the dilemmas in your life, the frustrations and the problems in your life, the questions that feel unanswered, if you turn to God, you will find solutions. If you do it on your own, you will never, ever find solution. You will always find sorrow and grief. And so my question for you to consider here as we finish up and then we celebrate together with song is that, do you approach life and its problems with a faith in God that envelops your thinking and processing and living? Or do you find yourself burdened by the questions, burdened by the problems, and then living, pleading ignorance or trying not to think about them or stuffing them away with stuff and pleasure and dealing with them that way? If you fear God, walk out of here this morning committing to this thought: I can't figure this out, but God can. I can't figure this out, but God can. That's the thought we should all leave this morning with. So I encourage you to consider that. Let me pray for you, and then we're going to sing and celebrate here together.